So, continuing on our little series on this book, Zen Living, which is written by moi, no longer in physical print, but you can get digital copies, sometimes used physical copies. And today we are covering part of chapter 19, which I called Daily Opportunities for Zen Practice. And this evening, calling it cultivating contentment instead of materialism. So, I went out to, my parents are still in town for another couple of days. I went out to dinner with my mom, and she asked me what we were talking about tonight. And when I told her, as I think was probably pretty typical, you start having conversations with people about this kind of thing, materialism. Like, she immediately got defensive. Not, sorry, Bob. Yeah. Oh, yes. Sorry. The microphone's nowhere near me. Here we go. How's that? Is that better? Everybody on Zoom was like, thank goodness. thank you for letting me know that. Okay. I'm my little Yeti buddy was not in front of me. Okay. Righto. So anyway, she immediately got defensive, not like personally, but just kind of like, well, I mean, there's really nothing wrong with just enjoying your life. And like, I mean, in some people's materialism is going to be another person's, just the a natural way to live. And like, so I definitely, acknowledge that this can be a kind of a fraught topic. What is material? What constitutes materialism? That sounds kind of negative and judgmental. So I wanted to be clear that as we talk about this, by definition, I want to talk about materialism as, prioritizing the acquisition of material things or experiences that cost money in order to, kind of in a pursuit of happiness in a way that and it ends up causing some suffering, or in a way that compromises the way we live. So kind of making it kind of by definition, not just how much do you have or how much do you enjoy it, but at what point does it start to cause some suffering? In what ways do we pursue the acquisition of material things? Or I'm adding experiences that cost money, like in a sense, you're acquiring something that gets used up instantly, but it still requires some money, as opposed to, I guess, spiritual or largely free sources of contentment and joy. So, and I don't think anybody's going to be doing this, but I think it's important to remember that as a community, we want to try to avoid as much as possible just assuming that we're on the same page about everything, that we could just say, oh, well, that's a ridiculous use of money, and just assume that everybody present agrees the same way, right? Or we say political things and, oh, well, everybody knows that politician is. We shouldn't assume that. A lot of times we can guess, and we all tend to be a little skewed toward a certain kind of liberalism and what have you, but it's best not to assume, because we really don't know what other people are thinking. And that's And all agreeing on some kind of shared, like if you're a good Buddhist, you think this way. If you're a good Buddhist, you don't do this. If you're a good Buddhist, you only spend this much money, it's not helpful. This is about each of us exploring our own practice, and maybe you might be completely content with your relationship to stuff and money and seeking happiness through material things. And that's great. And maybe at some point this evening you can be sharing in some ways where you help you manage to keep that balance in your life. I think, I mean, I'm not always, Zen priest. I spent a while in a Zen community, living a very simple life. But subsequently, in the last 15 years, I've been living, like I said, a householder life. And, there's times when I'm just, I don't know, there was something really striking, like when during the COVID shutdown, when you couldn't go buy stuff. And it was like, it was kind of refreshing in a way. Like I can't go buy that now. I just can't go. I can't do it. I mean, of course, you could still order online, but still, just that acquisition of stuff. So I wanted to just kind of get our juices flowing and to get into some small groups to brainstorm ways that people, so maybe it's not you, but you observe it. Again, we're not, it's not about judging other people, but we don't have to necessarily, you don't have to necessarily confess your own shortcomings with materialism. We can speak more broadly if that's comfortable. To just kind of brainstorm ways that materialism manifests in our culture and some of its repercussions. And again, I'm meaning not just, I'm not just talking about enjoying things. I came up with this definition, prioritizing acquisition of material things or experiences that cost money to bring us happiness, thereby neglecting or overlooking sources of happiness that are spiritual or free or simple. And you think about some of the costs of that kind of materialism aren't just, money. There's costs in terms of our time and energy and focus and priorities. And there's other things when you think of, like, how do you want to look back on your life? How do you want to have spent your time? And a lot of times, rarely are we, does it make it onto that list, like stuff we could have had or fancy things we could have done or, amazing experiences. Just, we tend to look back and think of very, very simple things that we had all the time. We'll break up into small groups here and have somebody in your group write a few things down, and then when we come back, I'll create a shared list that we can look at. So it'll just be about 10 minutes. So those in the cloud can take invitations to a breakout room.
Yeah, just want to talk about.
Okay, I will broadcast to the Zoom rooms. Ways that materialism manifests in our culture and its repercussions.
Any other group?
Three or four.
Thank you.
There's a group, right?
We need to make you a host so you can broadcast
that. Yeah, that'd be great.
That is that Dawn or that's Dawn, yeah. Okay.
Yes. Dawn.
You don't have to start in here. Sorry.
Come on back.
You shared it on
you. This is why this is better.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Let me see. Now I got to pull up my shared screen thing here. Or maybe we don't have to. All right. Let's not do it. Let's just So we'll start reporting back from groups, but once it gets to your group, if what you said has already been said, just don't repeat it, right? Just say, yeah, we said what all the other groups said, and then just add if there's anything else, right? Because we don't have time to go over everybody's full list. Bob.
Could you put the microphone back where you had it when you started?
Sorry. Yes, go ahead again.
Okay. Sounds much better. Thank you. Would you like me to start?
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, in our group, we started out with identifying the manifestations in our culture. Multiple houses, such as people have a house at the beach, a house at the mountain, and a house at Lake Oswego. people have four-door pickup trucks that are so big they don't fit in the hospital parking lots anymore. Big expensive cars that are not needed for their use, such as people who have an SUV that drive from their home to the elementary school and back every day. And they're using, a V8 with a large, capacity car to do that. There's advertising and social pressure to keep up with others. A lot of advertising to push products and things onto people. That's a sign of materialism as well. The piles of plastic stuff that are left over from kids' birthday parties. Not just the decorations, but also the wrappings and the plastic stuff to hold the toys to keep it from being stolen off the shelves at the store. also the push to have the latest things, such as the push now to have a new iPhone every year. There's even subscription services where you can get a brand new iPhone every year on subscription. One of the ways that the repercussions that was noted was that the people in the big cars seem to be less happy than the people in the more modest cars. Probably, in my view, because they've had to work so darn hard to get that big car, they're just grumpy grumpy most of the time. That completes our analysis. That's how much time we had.
Thank you. I do want to point out that, it all depends on how we define materialism. So if we define it as, there's some kind of cutoff of this is too much, then maybe, those things are materialistic, but there might be people who think they're not. But if we look at it in terms of instances where acquiring material things causes suffering or actually decreases our enjoyment of life, then I think there's several things you brought up in there, like the waste. Like it might not be, we might not like kind of personally suffer about the waste we create, and yet we are creating suffering in the world from the waste that we create. And that impacts us as well. Interesting. So yes. Some other group want to go? Courtney.
Jen.
I mean, Jen. Sorry. Oh, I'm sorry.
I guess, well, we talked about a few things, but I guess what I was thinking of that caused suffering is maybe when you buy something and maybe it's meaningful and not even that expensive, but you attach your memory or some value to that item, and then pretty soon you have like a whole house full of stuff that you can't get rid of because it's all like really important because you remember it from a certain time in your life or a vacation you took or somebody special gave it to you, but like now you can't get rid of those things. And that qualifies as suffering because you know you've confused what is like the love that you have for the person and now it's going to the object. And I guess we talked about a lot of other
and then you've got a house full of crap that somebody's going to deal with when you're gone.
We talked about that too. Yeah, and how even like it's hard for the other, you know, the people who have to get rid of it, like then it's hard too because you associate it with that person. Yeah. So there's like this weird way that we have of giving objects maybe more importance than they need.
Anything else that you hasn't been said yet?
We talked about why we acquire things, but I don't think that they didn't sound like they caused a lot of suffering. Like maybe you can tell me how it caused suffering. Like if you buy something for a hobby of yours, but then maybe you didn't need that, but you just thought you should buy it to liven up your hobby. Or maybe you want to start a hobby. And so you buy an object that tells yourself and everyone else that you are that kind of person who has, you know, a journal or a artwork or something like that. So it's like broadcasting who you are to other people.
It's interesting because I definitely, you know, I definitely do this. I love starting a new project and thinking like, okay, what do I need? You know, trip to Home Depot,
I do like that.
And, you know, I know this in a way, you know, it's not that bad. It's kind of fun. But then I find it's, you know, it's a lot easier to buy the stuff than it is to do what you intend.
Yeah.
So then there's kind of a, I don't know, it's kind of like you get the cheap thrill of like, I'm going to do this thing. And then you don't.
And you get mad at yourself for not doing it.
Yeah, and then you got all this stuff laying around. You feel kind of guilty for not doing it. And I don't know.
Yeah,
it's complicated. Kind of it's like just going for, I always just thought about this. I know people have probably seen this book. Okay, what is it called? I think it's called Material World, actually. And it has photos from all around the world. And they ask families to take all of their stuff out of their house. And so it's pictures of these families from all over the world. And it's the family and their stuff and their dwelling. And I'm sure like the Western families, like that was not all their stuff.
Yeah.
That was not all their stuff. So, you know, it's just an unimaginable amount of stuff, you know, and then you see, you know, people living in other parts of the world who just like, you know, they have a handful of belongings. They have some pots for cooking. They have a few sets of clothes. They have, and I don't know, there's part of it that looks and just thinks, you know, if we didn't have so many options, if it wasn't so easy to go and acquire things, life would be a little simpler. We might appreciate what we have more.
I sometimes wonder, like, this is everybody in the West has this. They have, you know, a table here with chairs and then another room that has a table of chairs, or like there's just a room that like you need a chair for like chairs for every room, or in like Japan or someplace you just would take your chair to the other room. Oh. You know what I mean? So
you all
make it inside. It's kind of like this this is ironic that there's a certain joy to simplicity and spaciousness, which actually in our culture tends to take a lot of work for most of us anyway, not for all of us, but for most of us, it actually takes work to maintain that. It's just stuff just comes.
Oh,
looks like Zenko has her hand raised.
There's also a version of the Material World book, which is What Did You Eat This Week? And that one's also really, really nice.
I think we actually have that one in our library. I think Gatho gave it to us. He's nodding. So anybody's curious afterwards in our sendo. All right, another.
Okay.
Let's see. All right, Yoli and then Alice.
So one of the things that we talked about with people who are really into expensive trips, and the trips revolve around five-star hotels, fancy foods, fancy places, instead of when you go away, actually understanding and learning about a new culture and people, which is just a much simpler way. You're when absorbed with material longings, you don't get to know things and know people and actually enjoy the experience. And one of the things that we didn't talk about, but it's again, people who want to acquire fancy things because they think they should. And for example, I downsized from my home in Tiger to the condo that I have where Gaffel is my neighbor. And I'm a physician, and my mother thinks that physicians should move upwards. And so she has not spoken to me since I bought my condo. She is unhappy, and that has made her unhappy. Instead of understanding why it's made me happy, it's made her unhappy. So I think people get to miss the point of things when the focus is so much on materialism. Mm.
Alice.
Our group made some really good points. First, we talked about advertisements and how they always kind of hook you in with a little bit of like your insecurities. Like they prey upon your insecurities, or even they make up insecurities sometimes, ones that you didn't think were a big deal, but then they just fabricated it out of nowhere. Like buy this and you'll be pretty, or buy this and you'll be fit, or buy this and you'll feel good, buy this and your neighbor will be jealous of you, or buy this because you are lacking. So like we feel that it's like perpetuating more suffering and perpetuating even more delusions, which is very, very harmful for like the masses. And then another point that Eric brought up was as we consume more and as we acquire more in products and things and objects, there tends to be a correlation with dehumanization of people. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, like just a degradation of human relations in customer service, or seeing people around you as products or goods or things that should be insta-human instead of like an Instacart, or kind of click this button or click this app and it will do it for you type of thing. And mm-hmm. No, they're just people. So,
Thank you. Gatho.
There you go. One of the things we mentioned is kind of opposite end of the scale from five-star hotels, fast fashion. Mm-hmm. Clothes are made so cheaply they're only meant to be worn once or twice and thrown out. Horrible waste of resources. But the other side of that, if we talk about suffering, I mean, not only do we suffer because of all the waste we're creating, you know those things are being made in poor countries by people working in sweatshops. I mean, you can't sell stuff for that cheap unless you're cutting corners on everything. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, totally materialistic, totally without point. You know, throw away clothes, throw away people.
Yeah, I mean, that brings a whole nother dimension to it in the sense of, given purchase might not be that materialistic in the sense of excessive or expensive or something, but the extent to which we engage in, rely on buying stuff makes us more and more a part of this whole system, which we know is really screwing the planet and people, right? So then there's this sense of like culpability because we're engaged in that whole thing, which doesn't feel very good to me. Veronica.
We talked about how there are sometimes tragedies that arise because there's like a rush for inventions or for products or things to be built really quickly. Ryan mentioned like the Challenger explosion. We talked about how having this, the extravagancy can sort of skew the economy and mean that, you know, some people are getting lots and lots of nice fancy things, but then other people are getting more poor. We talked about, I haven't read that book, you talked about food, but how when we're all buying food out of season because we can here in North America, not only is there the environmental impact of that, but we lose the connection to celebrating the next season arrive. Because if you can have strawberries all year, it's not as exciting when strawberries come out. So that's a bit of a loss. And then we talked about the pressure in the fashion and beauty industry, particularly for young people who are like dating and vulnerable, and that can cause a lot of suffering. This pressure to be buying things and, you know, the whole beauty thing. Yeah.
Thank you. Is there anybody else up there? Okay, Dave.
So y'all covered most of it, I think. First point brought up, I think, was just sort of the energetic toll. I think this was alluded to, just being surrounded by all these things, just having, like, feeling burdened by having all this material stuff. But one point that I think I haven't heard yet is that just the social isolation that it creates. Mm. How there was a time not too long ago that people had to share and people had to get into community because not everybody had everything. And how now, like, every single little house is its own little island with its TV and your range and your this and your that. Mm-hmm. And you don't even have to know your neighbors or anybody else in your community. And it just kind of having all that stuff sets you up for social isolation. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I think many people suffer from. So.
Good point. So anybody, did I miss anybody who wants to chime in? All right, well, so how do we practice with this? That's quite a question. A whole other, like, here we are, we've covered 45 minutes. And I just wanted to share a little quote from a Buddhist text that I actually mentioned in a recent podcast episode about the pretty related topic, right? Like the kind of the Buddha's teachings on renunciation and then kind of how we take that as householders. And this is a little text called The Fruits of the Contemplative Life. And the Buddha explains the merits of the contemplative life at length in other ways, but I really like this paragraph. And how is a monk content? So this is the monk who, you know, lives according to this left home renunciate monk, lives according to like 250 rules and only eats what is given to him, whatever. Just as a bird flies wherever it goes, flies with its wings as its only burden, so too is he content with a set of robes to provide for his body, and alms food to provide for his hunger. Wherever he goes, he takes only his barest necessities along. This is how a monk is content. So in my, you know, renunciate versus householder episode, I hope I made a good point that we all don't have to live a renunciate life. There are many reasons to live a fully engaged life with relationships and responsibilities and things that we do in the world. And then we have to have some stuff, right? Like you got to have a home and you got to have a set of clothes and all that. But there is a value to exploring a relationship to life that's more simple, at least at times. So this is one of the things that we do when we go to Sesshin, when we go to those residential multi-day retreats. So it's like we practice that little, or even really at a one-day retreat, right? There's this little microcosm of where we are. We're setting all of this stuff aside, right? We're certainly not going to buy anything. We're not surrounded by fancy things. We're not surrounded by fancy entertainments or anything. We're just, you know, sleeping, meditating, eating, resting, showering.
Meditating again.
Taking a walk, having some tea. Like that's it. And we don't talk to each other, and you don't like read or watch TV or do anything. And it's like, I wouldn't want to look like that all the time, right? I want to play the accordion. I want to have my dogs, you know, but it's valuable within context of that retreat to recognize after a few days, like how lovely this is. This is so lovely. Just, you know, you've got your cup of tea and you're just standing out there in the sunshine or the rain. And, you know, it's like, I think that's what Zazen and our practice can help us connect with, is another way of relating to the world that doesn't depend on these things, which means we're less, we're a little bit less compelled by them. We're a little less controlled by them. So that is, you know, my basic thought. I don't know if anybody else wants to, that sparks any comments or questions. Cultivating contentment. Hope our practice has helped us do that to some extent. And not just contentment, but a real sense of sufficiency and abundance versus lack. So I feel like that's one of the core underlying sources of suffering, this a sense of lack, a sense of dukkha, I guess, right? Dissatisfaction, which we're always kind of seeking to alleviate through the next thing, the next enjoyable thing, or the acquisition of something. And I just want to, so I'll share again. So I thought about Dogen's chapter on the four ways the Bodhisattva interacts with living beings. And one of them is giving. And giving, or dana, or generosity, is something that it's much easier to do, and we're much more inclined to do when we have a sense of abundance. If we have a sense of lack, maybe we'll give something, but only because we kind of feel like we have to. But when we have a sense of abundance and don't have a sense of lack, it becomes very natural to give. Do you need this? You know, here you go. So it says, a king gave his beard as medicine to cure his retainer's disease. So this is from, apparently there was like, at some point they thought beard hair brewed in a medicine would be useful. And so the king ordinarily, you know, but he just, his servant needed this. So he just said, here, and he just shaved off his beard so this retainer could have this medicine. A child offered sand to Buddha and became King Ashoka in a later birth. This is from a story where the Buddha's out, you know, on his alms round. And this little child really wanted to give a donation. But he didn't have any food. So he picked up some sand and put it in the Buddha's bowl. You know, and that offering, just like, I just want to give you something. They were not greedy for reward, but only shared what they could. To launch a boat or build a bridge is an act of giving. If you study closely, you see that to accept a body and to give up the body are both giving. Making a living and producing things can be nothing other than giving. To leave flowers to the wind, to leave birds to the season, are also acts of giving. So, no, giving seems directly relevant to materialism to you, but I think they're quite connected in the sense of, I mean, if you had that sense of abundance that, you know, your livelihood, your creativity, all of this is richness. All of this is abundance. To accept a body and to give up the body, to just have this life, to accept it completely, to leave flowers to the wind, even just to appreciate an autumn day, leave birds to the season, are also acts of giving. Frankly, the more stuff we have, I think the less we notice. Necessarily so, though. But it depends on our relationship to that stuff, right? I don't know, Eric, did you still? Yeah, go ahead.
I'm really glad I lowered my hand, though. I'm glad that you did. I'm glad I didn't speak when I originally raised my hand. Because I think you made such a profound connection between giving, and I was thinking, I was like, so would you say that originally I was thinking, would you say that where materialism becomes something that leads to dukkha is when we are focusing on the lack rather than the abundance. Mm-hmm. And then with your comment about giving, it kind of makes me feel or think that, you know, in our, I don't know the right words, I apologize, but in our struggle or strife to become, you know, to find our Buddha nature, that we find our abundance nature as well. And mm-hmm. so that giving becomes a natural part, and then materialism doesn't have to have a hold on us. And we kind of innately learn what we need versus what we want or what we are desiring. So mm-hmm. I thought that was such a beautiful, beautiful connection there that you made. It was, I love the association of giving with materialism and that connection now.
And also to some extent, if we look at, I mean, this could become an excuse and a justification, of course, but this is about us being honest with ourselves, right? Not about looking at anybody else, but about looking at our own relationship to material things and to ask ourselves whether this enables us to share, this enables us to be, you know, even our homes, right? That, maybe I don't share my home with you, but my home helps me get rested and take care of myself. So then I can be more present for you, right? And I was really struck when I was a monk and I, you know, all my stuff fit in one closet. And it was really, I mean, I really loved living like that in a way, that unburdened sense of just like, I knew everything I owned. I knew I could mentally picture every single thing I was responsible for. And I could only do that because I was living in community and we shared pots and pans and a kitchen and all that, right? But we would have a fundraising dinner once a year. And, you know, the community would cook all this fancy food and, you know, you'd pay a fair amount to come and eat this home-cooked meal. But one of the things we did was every table was set with fine china, which the people in the Sangha would bring from home, right? Like, so you have this set of like 12 set of china that you got from an aunt or something. And they bring these beautiful dishes for us to enjoy for this meal. And it always just like, you know, at that point, the thought of owning a set of china was like the farthest, like, mm-hmm. How much stuff do you have to have a spare set of china around? And yet it was a joy that they had it and they could bring it and share it. So no, I think that's true of many of our things is, you know, does this help help me be generous to others? Is it something I can share?
Seems like it's the opposite of coming from a feeling of lack.
Yeah.
And that material things are going to fill you up or fix that lack, right?
Right. Like, I'm not kind of like, well, I'm doing fine. I could do without that, I suppose, but you know, that'll help me do this or help me. Yeah. Alice.
I think there's also something to be said for caring for the items that you already have. Mm-hmm. And I think the session that we just recently had was a big like experience for me because we only had one bowl for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So that we had to like really care for that bowl. Otherwise it's going to taste like garlic from the night before. And I think the word is nyoho, right? Like right, where you have to care for the items that you have. And surprisingly, the more you care about the items you have, the more perfect you think they are. Like an old t-shirt, you know, like you're like, this t-shirt can never be replicated because I have worn it 5,000 times and it's the perfect softness of, you know, with holes and everything. I don't want to get rid of it because it's perfect. And like, I don't know that I think when you, the more you care about your items, the more like you're like, I don't know, love them maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. That's at the women's training monastery in Japan that there's a whole book about their training. And apparently anytime they are going to handle an item. So, you know, they're going to handle a teacup or something, they use a honorific about it. It's like I'm getting this wrong or something, but it's like whatever the word this would be, like, okay, water bottle, it's an O water bottle, O hyphen, like it's a honored water bottle. Do you know, familiar with it?
That's just how the language works.
Yeah I mean, it's just like, but it's built in so that you, when you were going to handle something, it's like, there's a little reminder that, thank you for being here to serve me. Mm-hmm. It is 9:00. So I will, we dedicate the merit of this Sangha meeting to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita. Well, for coming.